Today on Straight Talk Africa, some of the stories that made headlines this year in Africa, and a look ahead to 2016. Historic elections held in Nigeria and Burkina Faso. U.S. President Barack Obama paid a visit to Kenya, the homeland of his father. He also delivered a key speech at the African Union headquarters in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Some setbacks in Burundi and the Central African Republic. And a look at Pope Francis's groundbreaking three-nation trip to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic in November. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, December 23rd. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, happy Wednesday to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll reflect on some of the top stories that dominated the headlines on the African continent in the past year, and a look ahead to what's in store for 2016.
Well, so much to cover in 1 hour. Coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on our topics through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
Thanks, Mariama. But first, this past year in Africa saw elections, coup attempts, constitutional changes, and peaceful transfers of power. From Burundi, which is still dealing with political unrest after its president decided to run for another term, to Nigeria, Tanzania, and Burkina Faso, which saw peaceful transitions of power. It was a year of setbacks and gains for democracy on the continent. My colleague, Jill Craig, reports from Nairobi.
2015 was a year of ups and downs for democracies across Africa. Nigeria saw its first democratic transition of power in April, when former General Muhammadu Buhari defeated incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan. The polls ended 16 years of one-party dominance. In Tanzania, President Jakaya Kikwete stepped down after his constitutionally mandated two terms. John Magufuli was peacefully elected in October after a spirited campaign. And the former public works minister shoveled leaves and trash to mark Independence Day after canceling the usual festivities as part of efforts to abolish waste and reduce poverty.
The new president, Magufuli, has just started on a wonderful, wonderful note, full of energy, full of optimism, full of action, less talk. So this, again, is very heartening, especially for countries like Kenya that are just next door and for the region. Uganda goes to elections in about another month and a half.
Burkina Faso dodged a coup attempt in September and went on to elect the country's first new leader in 27 years. It was a successful end to the transition after mass protests ousted longtime President Blaise Compaoré in October 2014.
I would say that in terms of what we can see and the lessons we can learn in terms of democratic progress is the progressive rise of a responsible society, a society of citizens. You know, the quality of the political offer also depends on the demand, and this missing link is progressively coming by.
But for these highlights, there were also lows. Burundi descended into chaos in April after President Pierre Nkurunziza made his bid for what critics say is an unconstitutional third term in office. After a May coup attempt, protesters taking to the streets, and bloody police crackdowns, Nkurunziza was re-elected in July under a haze of suspicion. Nearly 200,000 people have fled the country. The U.S. has put sanctions on four senior officials, both from the government and from the coup organizers, while the U.N. Security Council has condemned killings and torture. And still, the violence continues. As it has in South Sudan, where tens of thousands have been killed and more than 2 million forced to flee their homes since civil war flared up 2 years ago. Supporters of both President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have accused each other of violating a ceasefire agreement. The peace deal called for an interim administration to be in place by late November, but these plans were delayed. The new target for a transitional government is mid-January. Protests turned violent in the Republic of Congo as President Denis Sassou Nguesso held an October constitutional referendum to remove a two-term limit and the age ceiling of 70. He won with 92% of the vote, raising suspicion among international observers. And in the Democratic Republic of Congo, President Joseph Kabila is accused of postponing the presidential election, originally set for November 2016, and attempting to amend term limits. Rwanda voted a resounding yes with 98.4% of the vote in a recent constitutional referendum to allow President Paul Kagame to run for a third term in 2017 and possibly two more after that. However, Eric Manga, a researcher at the University of Nairobi, thinks Africa would be better off building up institutions instead of allowing presidents to cling to power for decades at a time.
It is high time Africa should forget about this issue of laying their destiny with individuals. You know that we'll always have good ones and bad ones. But you know, if you have stronger institutions, we will be in a position to take the right path.
2016 will be another test for African democracies, with key votes expected in at least nine countries. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Thanks, Jill, for that interesting report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Madam Edith Sempara, a former Ugandan ambassador to the United States and the African Union. Ms. Sempara was among seven experts nominated by UN Chief Ban Ki-moon to be part of an advisory group that conducted a policy and institutional review of the world's body's peace-building architecture and made recommendations for 2015. Well, frankly, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa after very many years.
Very delighted, Shaka Sali, to see you once again, growing stronger, and obviously still very much on top of issues on Africa.
You're most welcome. And Emira Woods, Associate Fellow of the Institute for Policy Studies, one of the nation's oldest progressive think tanks, works for peace, justice, and the environment based here in Washington, D.C. It's always a pleasure, of course, Emira, to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
The pleasure is mine, and we see Straight Talk Africa 10 years growing stronger. Congratulations on a job well done.
Thank you very much, and I hope we continue to talk straight. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Like I said, Madam Ambassador, of course, plain potential and extraordinary. You went on to do other things. You were a World Bank executive. And what else have you been doing lately?
Actually, I had gone back to retire after 26 years in public service. I thought that was enough. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do my own things, try farming and other things. But because of the situation in Uganda, I've been forced to come back because I believe that there is a saying that says that evil triumphs because good people do nothing. I didn't want to be one of those good people who are doing nothing. So I'm back in politics. I'm back in campaigning. Mm-hmm. And we are extremely hopeful that the situation is very difficult. The ground is not leveled. But the people of Uganda are sending very clear, straight messages that enough is enough. We need a peaceful transition of government, of president, and we needed it yesterday.
Yeah. So who do you actually support in this particular round? Because the last time, of course, you worked very hard and really served very well for incumbent President Yoweri Museveni.
Yes, I served President Museveni on the understanding really that the values and the intentions that we had from 1986 were still on course. But clearly, I think there has been a lot of change. The president that I served, actually, I do not recognize anymore because the values that he espoused at that time are the opposite of what is happening right now. So I am supporting the former Prime Minister, Right Honorable Amama Mbabazi, for peaceful change in Uganda.
Haven't you heard from some quarters that when it comes to Uganda, apart from the incumbent, no one is allowed to develop an appetite for the presidency?
Well, but that is not up to whoever has those views. I think it is up to the people of Uganda. Democracy demands that people choose their own leaders. And that is what the people of Uganda are yearning for. So, and of course, as you know, NRM, a government, came to power through a revolution that we all supported because the situation in Uganda with violations of human rights, with the mismanagement of everything, that is what led to all of us really going behind the national resistance movement to support change. And as you may remember, when our president came to power in 1986, he said in his famous speech that the problem of Africa is not actually the African people, which I agree with, that it is leaders that cling on to power. Now, 30 years down the road, I think 30 years is not a very short time. That is, in my view, very unfortunate, because apart from the longevity, you have an employment of young people, about 83%. I think we are probably the only country that I know of that has that kind of level of unemployment of youth. We have women giving or delivering their babies in Mulago Hospital, which you know, on cement in corridors. We have women who have been stripped. One woman was stripped in front of cameras, and actually she was dragged on tarmac and stripped. I've never heard of any country that does that. And quite frankly, I personally, I wouldn't call it disappointment. It's beyond belief. It is beyond disappointment. I would never have thought that a president that I loved dearly and believed in would ever find himself in such a situation.
Very interesting. Emira, when you listen to what you just heard, what comes to mind, really? Because let's face it, you heard Nigeria, the most populous nation on the African continent. Obviously, the largest economy and what have you. It got independence back on October 1st, 1960. Not until this year, in March, did it in fact get an election, frankly, that was free, fair, credible, and transparent.
Well, clearly, when we hear what happens, what is happening, what has been happening in Uganda, it is not only painful for Uganda, but quite frankly, for the entire continent. When you have rulers who change the constitution, find ways to manipulate political processes to hold on to power at all costs. And, you know, I think what is even more grave is the circumstance in Uganda now, a recent producer, potentially, of oil, one of the recent finds on the African continent. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And if you think of the potential wealth of the country, the potential dynamism in terms of pouring that wealth into uplifting the people, mm-hmm. as opposed to the elites and the very few in the political echelons, it really is quite a sad commentary, not only really for Uganda, but for the world. So I think we've got to look to both the opposition leaders. I think we look to social movements. The women's movement in Uganda has been incredibly strong, and I see that as an incredible antidote to this type of authoritarianism. I think also, you know, we've got to look to technologists and recognize that there are new forces coming forward in Uganda, as in Kenya and elsewhere on the continent, that will change what it means to do political organizing, to do political outreach, to do information, which is the centerpiece for democracy around the world. So I see hope in both civil society, social movements, and these technologists in bringing forward new ways to force accountability, regardless of the ways in which those who are entrenched in power try to maintain their grip on power.
You know as well as I do that one out of four Africans may in fact be a Nigerian. And of course, there are pundits who have been saying over the years that if Nigeria can get it, then in fact Africa has got it. Why can't Uganda borrow a leaf from Abuja?
Well, I feel like Nigeria has a lot of issues. It's far from perfect. So I would say let's borrow the leaf from Burkina Faso, where people took to the streets to demand, you know, that people power. Rose up. Eh?
We'll and go I for think... a break and then come back to that. Now we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA2015Africa or 2015Africa. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Let's take a quick look at Africa 2015 year in review. In February, violence in the Central African Republic forces tens of thousands of people to flee their homes to escape killings, rape, and pillaging between the Muslim Salika rebels and the anti-Balaka Christian militias. On March 28th, Muhammadu Buhari, the All Progressives Congress candidate, defeats incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan of the People's Democratic Party to win the Nigerian presidency in a peaceful transition of power. On April 2nd, four masked gunmen attack Garissa University College in eastern Kenya, killing 147 people and injuring 104. The Somalia-based Al-Shabaab terrorist group claims responsibility for the attack. On April 20th, the International Organization for Migration estimates that at least 300 migrants from sub-Saharan Africa drowned after attempting to cross the Mediterranean in rough seas. On April 25th, Burundi's ruling political party announces that incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza will seek a third term in office, and that caused 3 weeks of unrest. On May 9th, the World Health Organization declares the Ebola outbreak in Liberia over.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at voanews.com/African Beat.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, which is coming to you live from Washington. Now, Emira, I have to apologize to you because apparently there is no democracy in Studio 52, because if a producer tells you to go for a break, you have to go like a good soldier. For that, I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful Liberian heart.
forgive me.
Without a doubt. That.
So talk about Burkina Faso and how Uganda can possibly borrow aid from there.
You know, I think there are some examples in history when people say enough is enough and they take to the streets. We've had those examples around the anti-apartheid period in the U.S., around the civil rights movement. I think the people of Burkina seized history in their hands and changed their destiny by demanding democracy. So I see that as really the hope for the continent, led by young people, opposition movements, trade unionists, musicians, artists, culture workers, all demanding a change. So we still have to see in terms of what the ultimate outcomes will be. But that force of power from the ground up is what is needed in places like Uganda, quite frankly, Rwanda, and many other parts of the continent right now. It is that same force that we saw with students in the Fees Must Fall campaign in South Africa, right? Mm-hmm. Demanding that their government pay attention to the responsibility of government to provide services for its people, and demanding that their right to education be honored. Mm-hmm. So it is that people power that I think will be the best way to counteract the authoritarianism, whether it's in Uganda or Rwanda or DR Congo. Unfortunately, the list is too long of those who are trying to hold on to power at all costs.
But how do these people, as individuals, frankly, manage to hang on to power without the support of either their people or some force somewhere else? How do they actually make it? You talk about Uganda. We're looking at about 35 million human beings. You have Yoweri Museveni, and Ambassador Simpara is correct. When he came to power in 86, he basically said the problem, frankly, is not about you guys. It's the guys in the State House who stay longer, perhaps than, in fact, 10 years. But later, when he's questioned, he actually shifts the political goalpost and says, you know what? That's not exactly what I meant. What I meant were African leaders who are not voted or not chosen by their people periodically. And later he shifts and says, you know what, in fact, it is a good thing to stay in power longer because you gain experience, and I'm now an expert in good governance. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think you unpack what's happening in places like Uganda or Rwanda or DR Congo, places where you see these referendums that are 98%, mm-hmm. 99%, mm-hmm. 96%. Clearly, there is you can call it manipulation, you can call it ways in which the political process entrenches itself. However you want to call it is not a free and fair process in which people are freely choosing a way forward. And so there is manipulation. We have to understand, unfortunately, it's not only on the African continent, it's around the world where political processes are manipulated by those who want to maintain power. So they find ways, whether it's changing constitutions or kind of leading in terms of how the vote is able to, and campaigning and all those processes are able to go forward. There are ways in which power manipulates processes in order to maintain its grip. And I think we have to unmask those strategies that have actually worsened any path towards democracy on the continent.
When these elections are organized, are they really meant for the primary stakeholders of Africa, or are they, in fact, meant for people called development partners? I have talked to some of these development partners, and they say Africa has, in fact, been making a lot of progress in the direction of democracy. Why? Because they hold, quote-unquote, periodic elections. Not qualitative elections, but periodic. Is that good enough for Africa, really?
Well, I think a free and fair elections would be a step forward, but it's often the case that it's not free and fair, that the processes are manipulated all along the way, from who gets to run, how they are able to run, what the freedom of the press looks like. You know, places like Rwanda, you don't have a free press, so you're not even able to have a political process that is open and transparent, where alternative views of how to run the economy, of how to deal with issues of employment for young people, issues of education, healthcare, those core building blocks of healthy societies are not freely debated because of the closure of the political space. Even political organizing, civil society organizing, is frowned upon, and the space for even social movements and non-governmental organizations to operate becomes even much more confined. It's not just Uganda, it's Rwanda, it's Ethiopia, it's quite a number of countries. Huh? So if the political space is so constrained, then it is difficult, almost really impossible, to have a free and fair electoral process, a free and fair political climate in which people can freely choose their leaders and hold those leaders accountable.
Edith, in fairness, some of these countries, especially neighboring Rwanda, there are some people who say, well, things are, looking good there, especially when it comes to people having unfettered access, for example, to health care, education, and a few other things. But how do you respond to somebody, frankly, who will ask you whether service delivery, for example, and fundamental human rights are mutually exclusive, as opposed perhaps to, in fact, being mutually reinforcing?
The two go together. If they don't go together, each one tears apart. It is important, therefore, that human rights are God-given, really, and therefore they should not be a matter of debate whether one should have a right to thought, a right to speech, a right to agree or disagree. Freedom of speech is not an end in itself, but it is a critical element of a human being. So I think that my sister here talked about the free and fair elections. If you look at a country like Uganda, the level, we are going to be having elections very soon in February. The level is, the ground is not leveled. There is a tremendous intimidation. The people of Uganda are demanding change. They are yearning for change. Clearly, they are showing it.
How do we know that the people of Uganda are yearning for change when we are looking at some of these media outlets telling us that according to some recent public opinion polls, the incumbent president could actually win an election by 60%?
Shaka, I think you need to ask them, but the facts on the ground indicate differently, and I think that is why there is so much intimidation. I mean, if the president was truly popular, then he would not even need to campaign. But apart from campaigning for the last 5 years, he does not want anybody else to campaign, and he interferes with the campaign. He intimidates. What has been going on in Uganda in terms of intimidation is absolutely ridiculous. Starting with Amama Mbabazi, when he started campaigning in Masaka, you saw young men in yellow President Museveni t-shirts trying to disrupt. It went on to Mukono, later to Mitiana, and eventually in Fort Portal, it became even more dramatic because you probably saw the president's chopper landing just 1 hour before the rally. And recently, last week, there was a bad situation in Tungamo where the young people from President Museveni's campaign were tried, actually, they threw stones they were carrying fuel. I don't know what that fuel was meant to be for. People are saying probably they wanted to burn the candidate's car. And instead of dealing with that, we saw the Inspector General of Police actually flying in the police chopper to take them to the clinic or the hospital. And we have seen since then our offices stormed in, invaded, and the home of the former Prime Minister also invaded. So that does not show somebody who is confident that he's loved and liked, and therefore he can easily win.
Very interesting, especially given, frankly, that the NRM justified its struggle on the basis that in 1980, Ewan Paul Muwanga had actually stolen an election for the Uganda People's Congress that eventually ushered in Dr. Apollo Milton Obote to have another term as president of Uganda. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week. Fred Turam Yomwe from Kunungu in Uganda writes, "The presidential election in neighboring Tanzania had a very big impact on Ugandan voters as we head to the polls in 2016. Magufuli's fundamental changes took many Ugandans back to the early days of President Yoweri Museveni. Following the Pope's visit to Uganda in 2015, we expect a peaceful election in 2016. I'd like to wish Happy New Year to Shaka and his TV team. Also, a Happy New Year to all Ugandans."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call directs and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Thanks, Shaka. 2015 was definitely a busy year in Africa. Major strides were made democratically in some countries. High-profile visits by U.S. President Barack Obama and Pope Francis. But there were major setbacks as well, with the unrest in the Central African Republic and Burundi. Also, the death of hundreds of African migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea in search of a better life in Europe. Lastly, millions of people will remember Cecil, the beloved lion, and the Ebola crisis quietly came to an end. Well, all of this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what 2015 event or story had the most impact on your life? Before we begin, I'd like to thank you for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. A reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA2015Africa. And if you haven't yet, please follow us on Twitter. Let's go to a tweet right now from Alphonse Priera in London, who says that for him, it's the declaration of Gambia as an Islamic state by President Yahya Jammeh without any mandate. We have another tweet, this time from Komoro Mwenda in Tanzania, who tweets, the 2015 story of the year in Africa was the selection of John Magufuli as presidential candidate for CCM He eventually won the election and became the popular leader that we needed, is what he writes. Well, let's now turn to our Facebook followers and go to a comment from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour in Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, the 2015 events that had the most impact on my life occurred when Saudi Arabia's SPA state-run news agency reported that at least 769 people had been killed in a stampede, with 900 others injured. Also, after 2 weeks of intense international diplomacy, a historic agreement targeting climate change was made in Paris. Merry Christmas to the entire crew of Straight Talk Africa. May the new year be filled with joy, happiness, and prosperity. Well, thank you, Mohammed, for all the well wishes and straight back at you. And many thanks for being such a loyal follower of our programs. Shaka and guests, your take on these comments.
Interesting. Emira, your reaction?
Yes, I think both of these, all the social media platforms reveal that people are paying attention on the continent to issues of democracy, to issues of the migrants, both the migrants risking their lives to go to Europe to find a better life for their families, as well as those who were in Saudi Arabia and lost their lives. So I think people on the continent are paying attention. These issues are touching their hearts. And, you know, the hope is still there on the continent. I think that's what I think all of the comments remind us, that regardless of how people are experiencing all the challenges, there is still tremendous hope for this new year, for electoral processes still to come, for an economy that works for all, for climate change. I wanted to actually applaud that last comment made, I think it was on Twitter, about the climate change conference, huh? Because I do think that was a shining example of African governments actually providing the leadership that the world needed, understanding that the planet is in peril. Mm. It was African leaders that were at the forefront, forcing the international community to actually commit to this 1.5 degree Celsius, no more than a 1.5 degree Celsius increase in terms of global warming and climate change, when the world was focused on 3 degrees, right? So it was African leadership that forced the issue that actually led to an agreement in Paris. And so I just wanted to pull that out of all the other comments made in the social media reactions, because I do think that was an extraordinary example of African leadership for the world on an issue that is critical for the survival of the planet.
Talking about climate change, Emira, I know that you have lived in this town for many, many years. When did you last have a winter type of weather on Christmas in Washington, D.C.?
I don't think ever. It feels much more like Monrovia today and in these days before the Christmas than it normally does here in Washington, D.C. So clearly, it is not only the floods and the rising sea levels, whether it's Monrovia or Dakar or Accra, all of our capital cities are on these coasts that are in peril. And so it's not only there that we have the immediate reminders of climate change and global warming, but it's even here in Washington, D.C., when the temperature is balmy and you don't even need a jacket, really, in spite of the calendar date so close to the Christmas holiday.
It is, in fact, supposed to be in the high 70s Fahrenheit tomorrow, right here in the nation's capital. Mariama, do you have any more feedback to share with our audience, please?
Well, a quick comment on this temperature. I think my daughter was hoping for a white Christmas, but I think we're going to be in Washington. We're going to be having a Dakar kind of weather. Maybe we don't feel so bad for not going to Senegal for the Christmas holidays. But let's move on to a posting this time from Justin Moremi in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, who writes, this year was highlighted with the strongest of events, both exciting and painful, including the rise of ISIS in the Middle East, Tanzania's election, and the migration crisis that has seen a lot of people die while attempting to cross the Mediterranean Sea from North Africa. One man lost his entire family his wife, and 7 children. I praise the Lord for all of you. May peace, harmony, and the love of God be with you at Christmas and through the New Year's celebration. Thank you, Justin, for your wonderful wishes. I actually have goosebumps just reading that, and I'm sending some right back at you and your family. Thanks for tuning in. Let's now go to another Facebook comment from Bernard Moisigwa, jester in Nairobi, Kenya, who writes, the Garissa University attacks in Kenya and the adaptation of the Sustainable Development Goals are the top stories that had the most impact on my life in 2015. Shaka and guest, your take.
Thank you very much. Madam Ambassador, your reaction.
Let me first agree with my sister that there is hope. There is hope in Africa. There is hope because we have seen throughout history that the human resilience is strong. And so we will overcome. I think one of the things that I like is that that the people or the Africans, wherever they are still interested in their homeland because you have had people calling in from different parts of the world, and that they are interested in good governance, that these are not issues for developed countries. These are concerns of Africans.
They are universal.
They are universal. Mm. And so, of course, there was a comment about the rise of ISIS, which is extremely worrisome. But I think also one has to understand that sustainable development is key to dealing with challenges of security and of peace and security. And I also think that leaders who sustain themselves in power, they become a risk to peace and security. Sustainable peace cannot be guarded by strong men or guarded by guns. It is guarded by strong institutions, by good governance, by development. So I think that the comments demonstrate that we are all united in ensuring that human beings, you know, the issues that concern all of us are universal, and that we can overcome as well.
Very interesting. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thanks, Shaka. That will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. And a big thank you for being with us yet another year. We appreciate your loyalty and wish you the most joyful and wonderful holiday season. And if you are a new fan and just want to join the Straight Talk Africa family and friends, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on your website, or simply watch us on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis recently took his message of religious tolerance to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. We'll discuss interfaith solutions to combat religious intolerance and extremism. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Once again, let's take a look at Africa 2015 year in review. On July 23rd, Burundi's Electoral Commission announces that incumbent Pierre Nkurunziza has won the presidential election with 69% of the vote. On July 30th, U.S. President Barack Obama made his first trip to his father's homeland, Kenya, as president to participate in the Global Entrepreneur Summit. He also addressed the African Union in Ethiopia. On October 25th, John Magufuli is elected the fifth president of Tanzania, defeating former Foreign Minister Edward Lowassa with 58% of the vote. On October 28th, Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara wins a second term with 84% of the national vote. On November 7th, Sierra Leone was declared Ebola-free after a year and a half and more than 14,000 cases. On November 24th, Pope Francis makes his first trip to Africa, visiting Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. During his visit, he addresses issues of poverty, climate change, conflict resolution, and unity among Muslims and Christians. On November 28th, Rochemarc Christian Kabore becomes Burkina Faso's first democratically elected leader in nearly 30 years.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you liked today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and welcome back. Today we are reflecting on some of the top stories that dominated the headlines in Africa this year. And look ahead to what's in store for 2016. Our distinguished guests are Ambassador Edith Sempara, former Ugandan envoy to the United States and the African Union, and Emil Woods, Associate Fellow of the Institute for Policy Studies based here in Washington, D.C. Well, I have to say once again, ladies, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
The honor is ours. Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome.
We are honored as well.
You're most welcome. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. I gather that we do have Amon. Amon Kanywanisa, good evening, Amon Kanywanisa from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Thank you so much. What is your question, Amon?
My question is that indeed the situation in Africa, especially in Uganda, people are not brothers. Hello, sir.
Hello.
I'm listening, sir.
No.
When did you speak?
Could you please ask the question?
The question that, we need to see the situation and the Frank, we need to talk about where we are having elections in Uganda, especially because we not frankly going to give the power as long as the being won. So what you need to frankly say that we need to frankly talk about to...
I'm afraid I think we do have some static telephonic problems, but I think I probably get the gist of it. It looks like he's probably actually saying that when it comes to elections in Uganda, it looks like he's pretty much echoing what you said about perhaps the absence of perhaps a level political playing field, where you have the opposition running against a ruling party, but of course in a country perhaps where the ruling party and the state are fused, and therefore you're probably running against the government, as a matter of fact.
Yes. I think that is the challenge that Uganda has, that you cannot tell the party from the state organs. Mm-hmm. So you have an electoral commission, which clearly is not free because all these violations are taking place, and they just mention them, but they really do nothing about them. You have a police force that clearly the other day, actually, the IGP told us something that we already knew, namely that he works on instructions. So,
really?
It was in the newspaper.
General Kari Kaihura, a man who studied law,
yes,
both at the Makerere and the London School of Economics?
Yes, but unfortunately, I think what he has been saying is that really he's under command to do what he needs to do. So we have also seen the law being misinterpreted. You have seen clearly the all state organs, the RDCs, the intelligence organizations, all doing things which they should not be doing. When I was ambassador of Uganda here, I considered myself ambassador of Uganda, not ambassador of NRM, although I subscribe to NRM. And I demonstrated it. I welcomed all Ugandans. I did not discriminate. If a Ugandan came and they needed help, they would get it from me. I wouldn't ask which party you belong to in order to render assistance. You may remember, you know, when the former mayor had problems in New York, I went there and tried to do some consular, you know, responsibilities. So what I'm saying is that we do not have professional organizations that they are either intimidated and they cannot stand and say, according to our code of conduct, according to the rules, we are not going to be able to do this. So that is really where the problem lies, that, you know, the president himself has openly said the army belongs to him, the police belongs to him, the oil belongs to him, the money belongs to him, so if people don't vote wisely, then they are not entitled to anything. So, I mean, you have a situation where there is no sense of accountability and there is impunity going on. And to us, really, this is most unfortunate because it's not just the peace and security of Uganda that is at stake. It is the peace and security over a region that is already extremely fragile. You have problems in Burundi. So, you know, peace and stability is key to all of us, because especially given the era of terrorism, when you have situations in Uganda like that, they really breed. They breed something that none of us could be able to handle.
Edith, let me ask you a very, perhaps, unpleasant question, which is that someone might, in fact, look at you and say, wait a minute, Ambassador Sempala, what did you know about the lack of political playing field in Uganda, and when did you, in fact, know it?
Concerning the political playing field, the first time I really realized that Uganda was on the wrong path was when Dr. Chizabesige Zikao was smashed. And at that time, I had already left the government. I was at the World Bank. And I saw with my own eyes.
That's 2011, correct?
Yes, yes. That is 2011. Otherwise, I mean, because I was never there, I've never voted. Probably this is going to be my first time to vote because Ugandans are not allowed to vote outside of Uganda. So that is when I realized that something inherently wrong was taking place.
Very interesting. Now, Emira, in 2009, I was with U.S. President Barack Obama in the Ghanaian capital of Accra. And I remember he addressed Africa at the time and said that Africa does not need strong men. Rather, what it needs are strong institutions, just like it is said a little bit earlier. Sometime during the summer this year, he also went to the de facto capital of Africa, Addis Ababa, and said pretty much the same thing. In fact, he was wondering about people he characterized as life presidents. Why does he talk the talk without, in fact, walking the talk so that Africans can walk the walk?
Hey, Shaka, you always ask the best questions, huh? That's
really
absolutely to the heart of the matter. I think the issue is the U.S. defines its quote-unquote national interests so narrowly, and it is often based on its very narrow corporate interests, its economic interests in Africa and elsewhere around the world. So we hear these lofty statements coming out of President Obama, but then we realize that the policies in place have really maintained business as usual, primarily in areas of oil, gas, mining, and you can add now land grabs. There are these sectors that are of interest to U.S. investors. And so the U.S. typically, I mean, it's not only now, it's historic. It's both Democrats and Republicans have looked the other way, signed deals with people, whether it's Mobutu or so many others, long list of leaders that were ruthless in spite of their human rights record, that the U.S. Actually channeled resources, primarily military support, whether it's military sales and hardware, military training, because they were seen as doing the bidding, particularly on behalf of U.S. corporations and U.S. corporate interests. So it's great to, whether in Accra or in Addis, make these great statements. But the statements are really meaningless if they are not followed by changes in U.S. policy. And I think, you know, it's only now one more year of an Obama administration. All of the hope and excitement has long waned in terms of what would come with an Obama administration, a son of Africa being in the highest office of the land here in the U.S. And unfortunately, you know, expectations have been dashed. But we can say one more year, there is still time to hit that reset button. If the U.S. could do it, certainly for Cuba, then why can they not hit the reset button in terms of how they engage with Africa? I think we've got to look at places like Libya and understand that the U.S. has gotten it all wrong for quite a long time, and it has led to disastrous results. And so we've got to in this new year, find ways, opportunities to engage in more productive, more creative, reinforcing the need for human development, human security.
In 20 seconds, Obama has also actually said for those African dictators who say that all people need to care about is service delivery, not freedoms, whatever. He has actually said that even prosperity without freedom is a form of poverty.
Yes. We need all of the freedoms, the four freedoms, including freedom from poverty.
Unfortunately, I don't have that kind of freedom because I'm being told to go. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Ambassador Edith Sempara, former Ugandan envoy to the United States and the African Union, and Emira Woods, Associate Fellow of the Institute for Policy Studies, a think tank based here in Washington, D.C. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hope alive. Because without hope, my friend, there is no tomorrow. As we bid farewell 2015, wishing you a happy holidays. And of course, there is a saying, the mightiest power on this planet Earth is hope.
Is hope. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.